Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, March 11th, 2016. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. And how are you, Brian?
I am splendid today.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I am good. Happy to be here. Good morning.
I'm happy you're here as well. Good morning to you. Hey, we have a sponsor this week. That sponsor is Casper, the mattress company. I'm pretty pleased with that because they help me sleep better. We'll talk about them more soon. But before we get to that, we really need to talk about the Department of Justice response to Apple, their legal response in this FBI iPhone unlocking court order case. And Brian, you've done some reading on this, so do you have any first thoughts?
I do. There's a lot going on. It's a nice big filing, and there's a lot to like, or when I say like, I actually mean hate.
Mm-hmm. I mix those up sometimes.
Yeah, it's quite frequent. The thing that I honed in on most, though, was just some blatant shenanigans that our government is playing with some numbers and data, and this sort of playing an assassination through implication, insinuation game. Mm-hmm. And it really, really annoys me. In particular, let's actually look at the I've got. Do you want a long quote?
Sure.
It might be too long. It's so. All right. Similarly, this is what the government said in its filing. Similarly misleading is Apple's argument that the order will force Apple to provide access to data to foreign governments. As a legal matter, the order could not compel Apple to follow or disregard the laws of foreign countries. The pressure of foreign law on Apple flows from its decision to do business in foreign countries, not from the order. Apple suggests that as a practical matter, it will cease to resist foreign governments' efforts to obtain information on iPhone users if this court rules against it. It offers no evidence for this proposition, and the evidence in the public record raises questions whether it is even resisting foreign governments now. For example, the government says, according to Apple's own data, China demanded information from Apple regarding over 4,000 iPhones in the first half of 2015, and Apple produced data 74% of the time. Apple appears to have made special accommodations to China as well. For example, moving China user data to Chinese government servers and installing a different Wi-Fi protocol for Chinese phones. Let's see. Probably skip. Skip. And thus, and then he quotes, they quote someone. I couldn't actually figure out who they're quoting because what do you call the evidence file?
Jeff. You mean like an attachment?
Like example 11. Yes. Yeah, they didn't have all of the attachments. It's not called an attachment, though. Exhibit. The exhibits.
Oh, they didn't have
all the exhibits.
Okay, I see where you're going.
Attached to this filing that I was able to find. But they quoted someone who said, thus Apple is presumably sharing confidential information with the Chinese government. Of course, there's no evidence for that.
That's a pretty inflammatory statement to make without any data to back it up, and especially after setting up the statement with a very skewed take on what's happening in China.
Yeah, so let's look at the first part. So Apple has basically said, look, if you make us give you a back door, everybody else is going to make us give them a back door too. That's been Apple's contention. And to me, that is so incredibly obvious, it doesn't even warrant discussion.
Well, considering there are other countries that have already voiced interest in doing so, China even tried to do this at one point very recently, but then backed down.
Yeah, and part of any American company's ability to resist a foreign government on such things is complying with U.S. law. The U.S. is a bastion of privacy and security, at least theoretically. Seems less so on a daily basis. But so to just sort of pretend that whatever happens in the U.S. isn't going to have any kind of effect on Apple outside of the U.S. just defies all reason. It stretches any ounce of credibility that the government has in this case, I think.
Hey, Brian.
Yes.
It seems to me that the government is attacking Apple's business model in order to obtain legal leverage. In other words, you should not do what's best in your judgment to protect yourself against foreign governments because you have no proof that your judgment and estimation of your business model being valid circumvents or supersedes our legal needs. That's an interesting argument.
It is an interesting argument in that I don't necessarily see that argument being made.
Well, it's what they're doing. They're saying, well, you have no evidence that if we have our way with this court order that it won't affect your business in any way in the future. And that's like saying you have to give up your best judgment and experience in your business model and your dealings in order to comply with our order. And then once Apple has to comply with the order, the FBI washes its hands and says, well, how you do business with foreign governments is now your problem. See what I'm saying?
Sort of.
All right, there's one thing that really stood out to me in the filing, and it was a very thinly veiled threat. And I don't have the wording in front of me, so I will have to paraphrase. And the Department of Justice said that that they chose to go down this path, meaning compelling Apple to create this this version of iOS that strips out the passcode security features, and that they chose to go down this path because they felt that asking Apple to hand over the source code and the security keys would not sit well with Apple. But if Apple is willing to, or if Apple thinks that there are other options, they would be more than happy to go ahead and ask them for the code, or compel them to hand over the code and the security keys. And that sure sounds like a thinly veiled threat to me. Like, if you just don't go ahead and do this. I'm sorry?
I'm not familiar with that part of the ruling.
Okay. Well, then in this case, you'll have to trust me. That's what it says. But it sure sounds like what the DOJ is saying is, look, we went easy on you. We didn't get a court order or telling you that you have to give us iOS source code and your security keys. But we're more than happy to do that.
Ah.
So when you have a weak case, you pull out intimidation and compromising of business judgment and threats because you can't win on the merits?
That's kind of how it feels.
Yeah, kind of.
So the second part of the Chinese stuff that, that really bugged me is they pulled numbers from Apple's transparency report where Apple reveals the number of law enforcement requests that it gets on a country-by-country basis. Mm-hmm. And the numbers that they're referencing in China are, let's see here, that Apple, in the first half of 2015, Apple's transparency report, and that's the most recent period that Apple has released yet, Apple said that it received 1,129 device requests in China, covering some 4,398 devices, and that Apple provided some data in 74% of those cases. Now, the DOJ's or the FBI's filing here is basically saying, look, Apple does this stuff that we're asking them to do all the time. They do it in China all the time. And here's the thing. device requests, the device requests that they're citing are, and here's what a device request actually is. The vast majority of the requests we receive from law enforcement relate to information about lost or stolen devices, and we report those as device requests. Device requests may include requests for customer contact information provided to register a device with Apple or the dates the device used Apple services. We count devices based on the individual serial numbers related to an investigation. So we're talking about lost iPhones, who owns an iPhone, and information like when those devices may have actually checked in with an Apple service, which is not at all Apple creating back doors for the Chinese government to get into its devices. It's this absurdist apples and oranges comparison, and I find it intellectually and morally offensive.
I was quite surprised that the DOJ decided to go down this path with the way they were representing facts or data, because it sure seems like they're being intentionally disingenuous.
It does. It's almost like they're hoping that no one actually, you know, including no one, the judge or anyone following the case, no one actually, you know, reads past anything that they're saying. Like, you know, like hoping that people don't actually go and look or something. I don't know. Super annoying. Now, there's one other point they made about something called WAPI. I don't know if anyone actually pronounces it that, but it's WAPI. Mm-hmm. And it's a proprietary implementation of Wi-Fi that the Chinese government developed to replace WEP. What's WEP stand for? Anybody remember? WEP? Wi-Fi encryption protocol, maybe?
That sounds right.
And there were problems with WEP, and WAPI was the Chinese government's effort to solve those problems. Now, there's a problem with WAPI, and that's that no one knows what encryption system is being used because China has labeled it a state secret. Mm-hmm. And because of that, WAPI could have a backdoor in it. Or it might not have a backdoor.
To the best of my knowledge, no one has discovered a backdoor.
I've not been able to find an instance of anyone actually claiming to have found any kind of a backdoor. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Sure.
And it is the Chinese government.
Sure.
You know, they like having their finger on the pulse of, you know, everything that's being done, and to, you know, be able to control that pulse to boot. So, you know, it is possible that the Chinese have done something nefarious with WAPI. It's completely in the realm of possibility. But no one has actually found any evidence of that. And so the issue here is that Apple released iPhones that support WAPI for release in China because the only Wi-Fi allowed in China by state by Chinese regulations is WAPI.
All right, so if you want to have a wireless networking protocol on your device in China, you must make sure it supports WAPI.
Correct. And the way Apple ended up doing it is they were able to do WAPI essentially alongside other versions of Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So it's not WAPI only. But it does support WAPI, and our government is saying that, is insinuating that having done so, Apple is basically cooperating with the Chinese government and giving it backdoor access. There's no evidence of that, of course.
Right.
And it's right. And that's pretty appalling, in my opinion.
Well, okay, so doesn't China use their own version of CDMA for cell phones?
Yes.
Okay. Apple supports
it's very similar to that.
Yeah, so Apple supports that. So does every cell phone maker that sells a phone in China. Are they all collaborating with the Chinese government?
Well, maybe that is possible, but it's just we don't have any evidence of that.
You know, it kind of sounds like the FBI is depending on the inability of the judge to deal with the technical details here. That's kind of how I'm feeling.
That seems a little disrespectful.
A bigger court with more resources would be more adequately able to dissect and analyze these affirmations from the government.
Well, you know, it's Apple's job to deconstruct a lot of the FBI's deconstruction here. When it responds, I think its next response is due on the 22nd.
The 22nd is when they are both going to be in court. So I think the next response is due on the 15th. Ah. I'm not certain on the date, but I think it's the 15th.
So in a press conference, Apple actually held a closed press conference with reporters yesterday after the DOJ's, after the FBI's filing. One of the things that General Counsel, Apple's General Counsel Bruce Sewell said was, and again I'm quoting, "The tone of the brief reads like an indictment. In 30 years of practice, I don't think I've ever seen a legal brief that was more intended to smear the other side with false accusations and innuendo and less intended to focus on the real merits of the case," unquote.
Those are strong words.
Well, I say I agree. I haven't been in the legal business for 30 years or any years.
Yes, but I have played a lawyer on stage, and you know me. Therefore, you are qualified.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So anyway, there you have it. It's just kind of a mess. I am unpleased. I'm unpleased with all of these events. I'm just, the whole thing is just, it's getting close to sickening.
I think that's a great way to describe it. Yeah. And I fear it's going to get worse before it gets better. Of course, I'm also being hopeful that it will get better. So we'll see. I'd love to keep talking about this, but we have a sponsor that I need to mention, and that is Casper, the mattress company. And unlike the heavy, somber, scary discussions that we can have about Apple and the FBI, we can have happy, fun, wonderful talks about Casper mattresses. I really like mine a lot. I've been sleeping on mine for quite a while now, and my sleep patterns are greatly improved because I'm using one. That's a wonderful thing for me because I do have serious sleep issues. I love that they've been able to hit price points that are much more affordable than comparable mattresses from other companies. And I love that they give people 100 days to try these out and make sure that it really is the right mattress for them, which is really smart because going into a store and laying on a mattress for 5 minutes and then deciding that's the bed for you, that really doesn't work well for me. And giving you 100 days, well, I think that's incredibly generous. But I think it's also something that's very easy for them to do because you're not going to return your mattress. Once you get on this and start sleeping so much better, you won't want to give it back. Matter of fact, you will be disappointed when you travel and have to sleep on mattresses that aren't from Casper. So you really need to check these out. They have sizes ranging from twin all the way up to king. Pricing starts at like $500. And I bought the queen size mattress. It's an $850 mattress, but you guys can get it for $800 because what they're doing is giving all of our TDO listeners a $50 discount. So what you need to do is go to their website, casper.com/TDO, and then use the discount code TDO, and you're going to get your mattress shipped to you, $50 discount. Also, you don't pay any shipping. It's a beautiful, wonderful thing. So you can order one a couple days later. It shows up at your door. And 5 minutes after that, you can curl up on a beautiful, wonderful, comfortable new mattress and take a nap. Absolutely love it. So go to their website, casper.com/TDO. Use the discount code TDO. Get yourself $50 off a killer mattress. You will be so happy. And thank you, Casper, for being our sponsor. All right. Before we wrap up, real quick, John, you have some tips on how to make your passcodes more secure for your Mac and your iOS devices. So I thought this would be a perfect time for us to talk about that. So what are your tips?
Well, I'll tell you, because we don't have much time left, I'll get to the bottom line very quickly. I found a great article at the InfoSec Institute that talks about the difficulty of hacking a password. And it turns out there's a formula based on the complexity of the character set, you know, uppercase, lowercase, letters, numbers, special characters, and the length of the password in characters. And the formula says that the controlling factor, the dominant factor, is the length of the password. So you can be cutesy and you can do character substitution and you can use special characters, but the biggest, best effective way for you as a human, if you have to generate your own password, now we know there's tools that we can use to create passwords, but in those situations where you must create a human password, the best thing you can do is make it long, 12 characters left, 12 characters or more, to give yourself a fighting chance against automated hacking attacks against your password. So that's the bottom line. And if you can create a complex passphrase that you can remember with perhaps misspellings and special characters, that's all the better. But 8-character passwords no longer cut it in terms of hacking attempts. And basically think about any creation on your own of a human password, 12 characters at least.
All right. That's
what you got to do.
So it sounds like I need to go back and update some passwords that I have because I know that they are only 8 characters.
That's right.
All right. Good to know. Cool. Thank you for figuring that out and passing that on, because I'm certain there's a lot of people out there that want to do everything they can to make sure that their personal lives are as secure and private as they can be. And this is an easy way to help ensure that. So that's
great. Article that explains it all at the Mac Observer. It's called "This One Thing Will Make Your iPhone and Mac Passwords More Secure." It's relatively recent at TMO, published yesterday.
Well, and it'll be linked in today's show notes. So thanks for writing that, John.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
All right, we are out of time. So, John, thank you for being here.
You're very welcome.
And Brian, thank you for being here.
Yep.
And Casper, thank you for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, casper.com/TDO. Use the discount code TDO and buy yourself an awesome mattress. You will be very happy that you have one. It will almost be like we're sleeping together. Listeners, thank you for joining us. And we will see everyone again next week.